Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. Cities across Ukraine have been hit by Russian missile attacks in recent days, knocking out power and water. But the retaken city of
supervisor who shot and killed six co-workers left behind what he called a death note. Andre Bing blamed others for mocking him and said he wishes his parents would have paid closer attention to his social deficits. Bing also said he did not plan the shooting, but that, quote, things just fell in place like I was led by the Satan, unquote. Co-workers who survived the shooting say he was known for being difficult and for being hostile with employees. Police say Bing legally purchased the 9mm gun he used the day of the killings. He had no criminal record. Bing died at the scene of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. I'm Mike Hempen.
Residents of Colorado Springs are reassessing things after last weekend's mass shooting at a gay nightclub. State Representative Leslie Harrod says she had hoped the city would have aged out of hate.
Of transphobia.
Shooting at a popular gay club last weekend has Colorado Springs looking inward.
I think a lot of people, including myself, might have ascribed to the notion that we were going to age out of hate.
State Representative Leslie Harrod is the first openly LGBTQ and black person elected to Colorado's General Assembly.
It's not going to just go away. In fact, it's being bred in our communities and it's been lifted up. So we have to actively change that.
European Union data shows Twitter took longer to review hateful content and removed less of it in 2022 than last year. Meantime, Elon Musk says Twitter will try to relaunch its premium service next week. The last attempt was flooded with imposter accounts. This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Quilo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Veterans, whatever you're going through, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Olivia, from Washington. Laid off and trying to keep our little kids from realizing that mommy and daddy haven't eaten in a while.
Roger, from California. I'm grateful we could afford our son's surgery. I'm nervous that now we can't really afford food.
Daniel, from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Donna from Louisiana. The storm just hit, and we went from donating to the food bank to needing it.
Keisha from South Carolina. I've been skipping meals so my two kids can eat, but filling up on water doesn't really work.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matmere with your headlines. Wild turkeys are back in Wisconsin in a big way. WPR reporting that more than a century after Wisconsin's wild turkey population was nearly decimated, now the birds are flourishing, with many flocking to urban and suburban areas. By the late 1800s, most of Wisconsin's wild turkeys had been wiped out due to unregulated hunting and the destruction of their former habitats by the timber industry. Early efforts to restore the birds to those habitats were unsuccessful, partly because officials were trying to send birds raised in captivity out into the wild. Then in the 70s, Wisconsin's DNR negotiated a deal with Missouri's Department of Conservation to exchange ruffed grouse from Wisconsin for wild eastern turkeys from Missouri. Once they took hold here, the DNR began trapping some of the birds and relocating them to other areas of Wisconsin where conditions were right for them to thrive. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
From some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. We come to you from Racine, Wisconsin, on our Working Class Heroes radio tour. And one of the one thing in the entire trip that I wanted to focus on are picket lines. People who are out, the courageous act of standing up and saying, you know what? We're not going to take the meager wages. We're not going to take any more of the diminishing health care benefits, the evaporating retirement benefits. Not going to take it anymore. And here in Racine, where the workers have said overwhelmingly that the proposal from Case New Holland, this big industrial company, this big agricultural company, makes those big machines. Our labor is important. Our labor is worth more than the pittance you're handing out. And said, look, overwhelmingly, 98.4% of the members voted in favor of going on strike. And this is one of those moments where workplace democracy is at play. And here we're going to talk to some of the folks with UAW, the United Auto Workers, Local 180, here in Racine, about, you know, What the reasons are, why, maybe how this gets settled, and why this is important. Again, the why, kind of an important point to make, because this job used to be the top of the line, top tier working class job with the best wages, the best health care, the best retirement security, all of that. Now look, you work, talking to these workers, they work their butts off. And they have made this company wildly profitable. In fact, the CEO is lining their pockets like never before, but yet not willing to share. And here in this moment, this is one of those things that they said, you know what? We're going on strike. And back on May 2nd, I mean, this is a while ago, back on May 2nd, they walked out on the picket line. And as I've said before, this is really one of those extremely courageous acts. Because if anybody who's ever been on strike knows that that is really an act of courage to say, you know what, we're not taking this. We're standing up, we're stepping up, and we're walking across this line. And understanding that, hey, you know, there's a possibility you may not come back. And these workers understand this. But we're in a moment where they're going, you know what, now is the time that we have to have this fight. We've given concessionary contract after concessionary contract. Now is the time we say no more. Also going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with the president of UAW Local 180 here in Racine. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1933. That was the day garment factory owners locked out dressmakers in several shops throughout Los Angeles. The women garment workers, overwhelmingly Mexican, had been organizing with the ILGWU for over a month. They began conducting strikes at selected shops the previous month to press their demands. The women wanted union recognition, a 35-hour work week, end to homework, shop floor committees, a guaranteed wage, and more. Historian Douglas Monroy observed that their demands reflected the harsh working conditions that they faced. It was a volatile, competitive seasonal industry. Businesses worked tirelessly to undercut each other and job out the work. Women workers were routinely unemployed or underemployed, subject to widespread wage theft and discrimination. They were frustrated by promises of the new Industrial Recovery Act, which promised the right to organize, but held no provisions for enforcement. Employers flaunted the new legislation and continued to discharge workers for union activity. When the employers forced a lockout, Local 96 looked to the AFL's Central Labor Council to sanction a general dressmakers' strike, which started 4 days later on October 12th. As many as 3,000 Latina strikers maintained solid picket lines despite dozens of arrests. ILGWU organizer Rose Posada arrived from New York to help with food distribution and packing the picket lines. The rank-and-file leadership produced a bilingual strike bulletin and made daily radio announcements. The strike ended in arbitration that conceded few gains to the garment workers. But the women of Local 96 continued to organize throughout the Los Angeles area. They led a series of strikes that would eventually win the closed shop.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Working Class Heroes Radio Tour. I'm Rick Smith, your tour guide, as we have found our way to Racine, Wisconsin. Sitting here in the UAW Hall, Local 180. And look, you know, we've talked about strikes over the last couple of weeks. We've been in Burlington, Iowa. We've been in Cedar Rapids, where we've talked to workers who have been on strike there. And now here in Racine, where the Case New Holland workers have been on strike for almost 6 months now. And here to share some thoughts on why it's been this long, what's going on, what's caused this, and maybe how we fix this, how we get folks back to work. I've got Yassine Amadi. He's the president of UAW Local 180 here in Racine. Yassine, thanks for taking time for us.
No problem.
First, let me start by thanking you for allowing us to come into your hall and talk to people. This is a situation nobody wants, is it?
That's correct.
I've never met anyone who goes, boy, I'm so thrilled to be on strike. So nobody's happy about this, are they?
No. Not that I know of. It may be a few people, but...
I've never met anybody going, boy, yeah, I'm so glad I'm not getting a paycheck. I want to fight with the... People just want to go and do their jobs, don't they?
Yeah, that's true.
They want to support their families. They want to move forward. So what's going on here? From your perspective, why are we here?
So we're here right now, in my opinion, because CNH refuses to bargain in good faith, in my opinion. You know, what they are offering on the table is what you could say is a concessionary agreement at this point. When you look at what inflation is,
right,
and, you know, what's on the table and how they want to spread out that little amount over 4 years is definitely a concessionary agreement, just on inflation alone. I haven't even got into vacation time and things of that nature, but just from a purely economic standpoint, it's a concessionary agreement.
And is, you know, look, there are times when you have to have concessionary agreements, and as a union guy, I understand that. Is this one of those times?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's 2022. As we all know, it's hard to find good work. There is not a shortage of jobs. And, you know, when you look at this area and what we propose to the company, we are not out of line with what we are asking for. You know, some of our proposals came right from other area manufacturers. So the fact that CNH refuses to move tells me that they really don't want to negotiate. You know, it appears as though they want to attempt to break, you know, this union.
This seems like an odd time to be doing this, though, because, you know, again, coming out of the pandemic, when your members were told you were patriotic and you were essential, this seems kind of, in fact, we were in Burlington, where, you know, there's actually a sign thanking the workers for, you know, for their hard work and their dedication, and yet equate to better wages, hours, or conditions.
No, it definitely isn't, you know. For some reason, the company thinks that what they are offering is good enough, and it's not. You know.
So is this about busting the union? Because look, I've done hundreds of these interviews, and we've seen these strikes, you know, go on where they've offered such an egregious contract that no one in their right mind could possibly accept it. That your members were never going to vote for it specifically to push you into a strike scenario, so that they could ultimately break your union. Because look, at the end of the day, Wisconsin is still a no rights at work state. So is this part of this, or is it they're just being shrewd negotiators, and you know they're taking advantage of a moment?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I really believe that they don't want to negotiate. They do want to break this union. The fact that they had people ready to go in there a few hours after we called the strike tells me that they never had any intentions on coming to an agreement.
Yeah, now the people who are crossing your picket line, the scabs that are going across the line, what do we say to them? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I grew up in an era where, you know, that was really frowned upon. My grandparents' generation was an era where you were basically ostracized for that. What's the sense now, do you think?
So I can answer that two different ways. I can answer that as the president of the local, or I can answer just as a rank and file.
Okay. Give me both. As the president of the local, what does it mean when you see these people going across the line?
It's truly disheartening to see that the leadership is fighting for them to get everything that they deserve, and for them to turn around and cross that picket line is very disheartening. Very. You know, I don't know. Another thing, I don't understand why they're doing it. There's jobs out there paying more money than CNH.
Yeah.
And not just paying more, but offering more vacation and everything else right when you walk in the door. So I don't understand why anybody would do that. You're undermining your own position.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that you would have people who would cross their own picket line. Now I understand outside scabs where you go on Craigslist or something, you bring in, you know, these people who, you know, don't know the box end of a wrench, and you're going to bring them in to put the wrong tires on and all this. I kind of get that, because you can exploit desperation, which is what the wealth class has always been masterful of doing. But, you know, someone where this is where you're going to live, this is where you're going to eat long after this is over, because this will be over, right?
Yes, it will be over.
And you're going to have to go back in there, and you're going to have to work with those coworkers. That's the thing I never got. And you know, my problem with this from the corporate standpoint is, why do you want to cause this kind of dissension? And then you go, well, you caused this kind of dissension because you can exploit the division, right?
Of course.
Divide and conquer.
Of course.
Which is why I think we're in the position we're in.
Yes.
So now, as an individual, you know, not the union president, take your union president hat off, you know, what's the feel there?
So I look at it like this. I look at it like we all part of the mob, and, you know, we all got indicted by, you know, U.S. government, and I'm paying the bill, everybody's lawyer bill, to be represented, and I'm telling everybody, hey, you know, it's okay. Just keep your mouth shut, and we'll get out of this, right? And so I look at when somebody crosses that picket line, like somebody that's went to the DA and said, hey, I don't want to be a part of this indictment. I'll be a witness against these guys. Right. And, you know, we all know what happens to those type of people when they do those things. Either they go into witness protection or something else happens to them. Right. So at the end of the day, they aren't loyal. There's no, the only person that they have any allegiance to is their self. So
isn't that generational? I mean, and this is where, you know, you look at what we've been told Reagan era forward. It's all about the individual. Hooray for me and the hell with everybody else. This is kind of that. But I do actually have some hope going forward, because I think the younger generation sees the kind of community and the kind of coming together that, you know, this stuff might not happen in the future. I'm hoping. I got to be hopeful.
I don't know. Something else I was going to say also is that, you know, the people that I chose across the line, I don't like their decision, but I guess I have to respect it. And I hope that they respect my decision on how I treat them in the future.
Yeah. You're so much more generous than I am.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a whole lot I could say, but I want to keep it PG. But, you know, it's no excuse or reason anybody could tell me that could justify that.
Yeah.
No, I got no sympathy or empathy for them, you know.
Or what comes next. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Yassine Ahmadi. He's the president of UAW Local 180 here in Racine. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you'll find ours. But, you know, Yassine, I'm looking at this situation 6 months into this. How's the community been responding? Because ultimately, your members, you know, they don't have the paycheck that they were collecting. You know, families are struggling. What kind of responses are you getting out of the community?
So we've been getting an enormous amount of support from the community overall. I think the company is trying to taint the image of the UAW with the propaganda that they put in the newspaper, the half-truths that they put in the newspaper to, you know, have the community question as to why we out on strike, right? And anytime that I get the chance to talk to someone that's on the outside looking in, and I explain to them what's going on, you know, if they weren't on our side, they are after that conversation.
Right, because here's the thing. We're not used to, in our society right now, of talking about strikes. I mean, the sad reality is there haven't been many over the last several, you know, 20 years. Most people aren't in unions now. I mean, in the private sector, unions are about 6% of the workforce. So when people hear about, you know, what's going on, they internalize it, because most workers, sadly, they don't have the ability to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. They don't have collective bargaining rights. Whatever the employer imposes on them, that's what they get. So that we're not trained as a society right now to go, hey, we don't like what you're offering, we're going to demand better.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking to these people who have that frame of mind that, you know, I don't get to argue with my boss, they impose whatever they want. Mm-hmm. They want me to pay $6,000 for health care, I'm going to pay $6,000 for health care. What do you say to them?
I say if they really don't like what's going on in the workplace, then they need to organize and demand that the company or whatever corporation collectively bargain with them to get what they want.
Right. But in this situation that you're in now, because they hear, I think the company's over 3 or 4 years offering $1.50 raise.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of workers who haven't gotten a raise in a decade are going, well, that sounds like a good deal. Why isn't that a good deal? Because this is where
we don't have enough time to talk about why it's not a good deal. But this is some key points I want to drive home. Right. When you look at inflation. Right. And let's say you look at the inflation numbers, you look at what MIT says that it costs to have a livable wage in Racine County. If you have two kids, we are not even there. We are definitely not even there. MIT did a study in 2019, and at that point in time, the number was $31 an hour. We aren't there in 2022, and inflation, I'm sure, has drove that number up.
Right. But that's across the country. That's not news to any working person. So they're looking at it from their perspective. Look, I'm struggling to get by.
But that doesn't make it right.
Exactly.
That doesn't make it. Just because you're struggling doesn't make it right. These corporations are making enough money to pay everybody what they should be getting paid.
And this company, wildly profitable, right?
Sure.
Or they were. Because I got a question, you know, the crap that they're putting out.
Yep.
Is anybody buying it?
Well, I don't think so. You know, I did get some hate mail from a dealership about why won't we accept the deal. I also went,
so send that back and go, why won't they accept our deal?
Oh, I wrote him back. I wrote him back.
See, this is where I think a lot of people don't understand. It's a give and take when you're at the negotiating table.
It is.
Because I saw this, Twitter post. A guy said, "Hey, there's a deal at Case New Holland. Did you know there was a deal?"
No, but I will say my phone was blown up a couple of days ago about an alleged deal, and I said it ain't been no deal.
You know, and I reached out to the guy. I go, this is a last, best, and final offer. This isn't an agreement. This is what the company wants to impose on these people. It's not an agreement. Stop that. This is the propaganda that they put out. And again, as you point out, these companies have enormous amounts of money, enormous amounts of power, especially when you're talking about media. So, you know, the little worker groups, we don't have that kind of power.
This is correct.
Which is why I think it's so important that you come and you talk to us about and share what's really going on. That wasn't a deal. That was an imposition. That was them going, you'll take this, and that's final.
Yeah.
No discussion.
Yeah.
And that's not how this system works, is it?
Yeah. No. What they wanted to do was get down or lay down type of situation with that last, best, and final. And you know, the tactics that they've been doing, sending my members mail, talking about you need to talk to your people and have you guys vote on it. For what? I shouldn't have to get up to the microphone and sell someone why they should vote yes for it. And I'll never get up to a microphone and tell people to vote yes on something that I know is bullshit. I just won't do it. I will not get up to a mic and say yes, vote on something that I know it is not worth voting on. I'm not going to do it. I'm not here to tell my membership, well, take this and we'll live to fight another day. No, the day is today.
Yeah,
it's now or never. It's now or never. It's that simple.
And you're 6 months into this. Huh?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And I say all the time, no one wins in a strike. So I'm.
Oh, yeah. It is one person that wins in the strike. The company's attorney, Larry Hall, is winning. He is racking up those billable hours. I'm sure his bonus this year is going to be very well.
I mean, because the workers, they end up losing paychecks for your members 6 months. Yeah. The company has a clearly going to have a hit to their name. Their customers aren't going to be happy. I guess you're right. The lawyers win.
Yeah, the lawyer wins.
So is there a way forward? I mean, you're in these negotiations. Do you see a way forward on the short term, or is this going to be a much longer scenario?
So ultimately, the company has the power to end this. Like I said it before,
they could end it right now.
We are not asking for anything that's out of line, right? So, you know, it's up to them on if they want to end it or not. I'm thinking that right now that they don't, for whatever reason. But it's totally up to them. You know, I'm not looking to bring any concessionary agreement forward to my membership. For what? It's 2022. There should not be a concessionary agreement anywhere in this United States right now.
No, especially
these companies have record year profits year over year in a pandemic. It's absurd.
It is absurd, but sadly, it's the world that we're in because they know they can divide us. So, last question I've got for you, and you're talking to your members. You know, what are we telling them in this moment? What's the message?
We got to stay strong. We got to hold that line. As long as we hold that line, we'll get what we deserve. That's what it comes down to. Everything that's going on right now with them sending things out is nothing more than to divide and conquer this local and to create, you know, issues within the local on, oh, why are we voting on this? Why are we doing that? It's not about that. You know, only thing I'm asking for is that the membership trust us and bring forward what we think is proper. Yeah. But to bring forward anything less than that, we're doing ourselves a disservice.
No, it's and one of my pet peeves is, and I don't take this the wrong
Go
way,
ahead.
But you said the word deserve. We deserve this. You don't deserve this. You earned this.
Okay.
This is where I think a lot of this breaks down. Your labor created this wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Your
this
labor should be compensated.
This is true.
And this is where I think as a society, we've lost that messaging. We've become grovelers and beggars as opposed to saying, look, our labor is worth something.
Yes.
And we demand better.
Yes.
That for me is the direction.
That's correct. Because you're giving up the ultimate, which is something you never give back, and that's your time.
Yep.
So you know, they got more than enough money to pay us. You know, they pay in other places more. So I don't know what the problem is here.
Yeah. It's power and control. But Yassine, I appreciate you taking time for
us. No problem.
Again, thank you for inviting us into your local to talk about this. I think this is really important, and I wish you the best. One day longer, one day stronger.
Yep. Thanks for coming.
Thanks so much, brother. Appreciate it. No, this is one of those things, folks. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I know it's my little pet peeve, but workers earn what they get. And I hope my hope for these workers is, well, they get...
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Capital Riot, I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Two Chicago area sisters received 30 months of probation this week after pleading guilty to joining the mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol. Federal prosecutors had asked for at least 30 days in jail. But a Montana man received 3 years in prison. Joshua Hughes and his brother, Jarrett Hughes, pleaded guilty to obstruction of an official proceeding. They were near the front of the mob that pursued a Capitol police officer up the stairs before he led them away from the Senate chamber. A Pennsylvania woman linked to a far-right extremist movement was convicted of federal charges. Prosecutors say Riley June Williams was part of a group that stormed House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office. The jury deadlocked on a charge of aiding and abetting the theft of a laptop stolen from Pelosi's office suite. And jurors have begun deliberating charges of seditious conspiracy against Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes and four associates. The jury's now on a Thanksgiving break. I'm Ben Thomas.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Look through your children's eyes to see the true magic of a forest. It's a storybook world for them. You look and see a tree. They see the wrinkled face of a wizard with arms outstretched to the sky. They see treasure in pebbles. They see a windy path that could lead to adventure. And they see you, their fearless guide through this fascinating world.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. Some prominent Wisconsin Republicans expressing skepticism about former President Trump's plan to run for president again in 2024. Former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan told ABC News, quote, "I want to win and we lose with Trump. It was really clear to us in 18, in 20, and now in 2022, unquote. Ryan, who criticized Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election and calls himself a never again Trumper, said those elections underscored declining support for conservatives in Wisconsin suburbs. WISC News reporting that Trump's lead decreased by nearly 7 percentage points in Ozaukee County. In 2016, Trump won Wisconsin by 27,000 votes. In 2020, he lost by about 21,000. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
...acted to inflate the value of its stock to benefit rich shareholders. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, couldn't consumers just switch to Huggies, the brand sold by P&G's main competitor? No, for it's a co-monopolist, having also goosed up its prices.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Working Class Heroes Radio Tour. Remember, if you miss any portion of the program that we've been on, hey, thericksmithshow.com. That's where you go. Now we're going to get down to the brass tacks. We're going to get down to, well, what's going on here at Case New Holland. What's being done in the negotiating? What's going on in the back rooms? The real skinny. That's why I've asked Rich Gilwaukee to come talk with us. Rich is the chairman of UAW Local 180 here in Racine. Also, he is the president of the UAW CNH Council. He's the guy who would know. So, Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate you.
So, right from the start, why are we here? You know, why is this situation happening? What's going on?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm kind of confused why we're here myself. I never thought we would be at this point, but unfortunately, we have hit a roadblock in negotiations. Management feels that they are offering a very generous package, which is not true.
Yeah, I've seen it. You know, I saw the last best and final offer that a lot of people online on the Twitters were saying, an agreement's been reached. And I'm going, no, that's not an agreement. Right. That's what the company wants to impose on these people. Right. It's not an agreement. And I'm sure you got a lot of that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, you'll have people that make commentary that are in, let's say, less desirable situations, that if they were offered what the company's offering them, they would probably be happy with it. But in our particular situation, we work for a very, very profitable company. They made over $550 million in the second quarter alone of this year. And they continue to make money hand over fist. And we just want to be treated fairly, a little dignity in the workplace, and have a say in our future and be able to financially support our families without having to work excessive amounts of overtime. And unfortunately, management has took a hardline stance with us and refuses to continue having conversations, even though they're legally obligated to continue to bargain. They simply said that's all the money that's left on the table. So we have a fundamental difference between what they think is a fair agreement and what we feel is a fair agreement.
And here we are in this moment. And look, nobody wants to be on strike. I've never met a worker yet, and I've said that a couple of times today. Nobody wants this, do they?
No, not at all. I mean, our members are absolutely dumbfounded. You know, when you talk about being labeled as critical essential infrastructure workers and being brought into work and trying to, you know, make the products that feeds America and feeds the world, and consistently being told that we would be taken care of when negotiations arrived, and then to see the type of offer. And mind you, so the offer, the last best and final offer, was a result of months of negotiating. Believe me, their first offer was nowhere near right. What it is now. And even what is now, I mean, it's real easy to pick the highlights, right? I can go through a proposal and pick all the best pieces and sure. Show that to the public and say, hey, look what we're doing. But they're not showing all the bad pieces. They're just showing you the things they want you to see. And believe me, there's enough bad in that agreement that would affect our members adversely. And we don't view this as a concessionary agreement by no means.
Nor should there be. We're not in a concessionary time. I mean, these companies, if you look at these earnings calls, and they're bragging about how much they're making off of you.
Absolutely.
They're bragging on how much they're pocketing and handing out to the shareholders at a time when inflation is through the roof. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is, and I said this from the start, our inflationary problems are because of, well, good old-fashioned American greed and corporate opportunism. This is where we are. They're seeing an opportunity to give more for the wealth class and less for the working class. This is a massive redistribution of wealth, which we've seen over the last 45 years. Nothing new here, Rich.
And you bring an excellent point up because, you know, that mechanism, that engine, is a three-party engine in my mind. You have the workers. You have the company and the shareholders, and you have the customers.
Right.
And each one has a vested interest in that relationship. Obviously, the company and the shareholders want to make their dividends and their profits. I get that. Also, the customers want to see their rebates. They want to see, you know, whatever the company's offering them in discounts on the price or right. On the interest rates.
And they want a product that has all the right wheels.
Exactly. And then it runs and lasts for them. Correct. Right. And then you have the worker piece. You know, the workers want to be rewarded for their labors and how much they've sacrificed in their lives. I mean, what I think a lot of people forget, and for me it's the biggest piece, you know, as you get older, you start dealing with your own mortality.
Sure.
The most valuable commodity that any worker has, that we all have, is time. Time is irreplaceable.
Yep.
When I'm giving you my time, I'm taking it away from myself. I'm taking it away from my family. I'm taking it away from my father, my mother, my sister, my aunts, my uncles, whoever may need my assistance. I'm not available for them because I'm actually at work trying to make a living and in some instances being asked to go way up and above the call of duty. And we're not seeing the company reciprocate that, I don't know what you want to say, generosity, that, hey, you guys went out there on a limb for us. I can tell you through the pandemic, I had numerous arguments with management on their safety protocols, on the masks they were providing, contact tracing, the sterilization of a workplace when someone was diagnosed with COVID. I mean, everything that they did was a constant fight, and they would sit there and tell me, oh, we're following CDC guidelines, yet posters would be put up in the plant saying, keep your 1 meter of social distancing. I don't know if they thought the meter was going to confuse us, but that's 3 feet. The guidelines were 6 feet, but it was next to impossible to keep people away from each other within 6 feet on an assembly line.
Right.
Yet they never even tried to put any type of efforts into seeing if it could be done in a way safer than we were doing it. Our temp check station, I can tell you every time I went through the temp check station, I never had a normal temperature. I was always coming in at 92, 93, 94 degrees. I'm like, well, I should be clinically dead with this temperature. Oh, but you're okay. Go to work.
Yeah, go to work.
I'm almost.
Your heart's still beating.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're here, you know, or you're coughing. Oh, you got a fever. At first, that was a big deal. But, I mean, think about it. Here we were at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. Nobody knew nothing. We didn't know if you could catch it from touching something or sneezing on somebody or breathing somebody's air. And all these unknowns, and yet we were told to come to work and continue operating like nothing was going on. People were going out on COVID constantly. We were constantly freaking out whether or not this would be our last day on earth because I catch a disease that nobody seems to cure and nobody can figure out how to handle at the moment. We were putting our lives on the line, the greatest sacrifice a worker could do, and this is how we're getting thanked for that.
Yeah.
You know, they made billions during that time. They made, I think it was, please don't quote me, but I think it's somewhere in the 20% bracket in profits over 2019 and 13% over what they did in 2020 and 21. So they have continually made exorbitant amounts of money, and they have over $1 billion in liquidity. They were receiving, you know, obviously from the government. They were probably getting tax breaks, and they were probably getting monies to keep their workers at the workplace. We never saw any of that. I never saw my members get a bonus for putting themselves on the line. No hazard pay. Not a cent was given to us. And they have $1 billion in liquidity. You would think that they would take some of that money and reinvest it into the workforce. No, they're in a stock buyback program as we speak. They have over $400 million allocated to buy back their stocks. And there's still $600 million in that account that, you know, all you got to do is give me like $35 million more and we'd be happy. We're done.
Yeah, that was the question deal. I was going to ask you. What does it take to get to where, to get to yes, to get this done? And the stock buyback pack thing is a particular pet peeve of mine. Because what they're actually saying is we have no useful function for all this money that we have. We have nothing better to do with it. We can't invest it in any way that's going to make us more profitable or build our business or grow our business and hire more people. It's just, hey, we're just stealing it. We're just putting it in our pockets, which is why I say all the time we need to go back to a good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower's tax policy, and start taxing these companies at a rate that, well, maybe they don't have so much just money laying around useless.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things we could be using that money for.
You would think reinvesting it in your workforce and in your facilities and possibly in some machinery to get you up to date on current technology that would help us maybe be more efficient and maybe make a better product would be on the to-do list. But unfortunately, all they want to do is remove all the shares that are in circulation. I would imagine it has a little bit to do with the dividends that they're going to have to pay in the next quarter. But if there's less shares out in circulation, that's less that they're going to have to throw out in dividends to those folks.
No, that's an excellent point. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Rich Kulawaki. He's the chairman of UAW Local 180, also president of the UAW's CNH Council, Case New Holland. We're talking about the strike that's going on here, almost 6 months long. Now, you bring up an interesting point about the stock buybacks and maybe pumping up the share price and all that to cover what the negative of this strike is going to be on the shareholders. Because ultimately, I see shareholders as the ones eventually going, hey, get this done because we're greedy. We want our money back. Do you see that playing into? Because look, if you're making a subpar product and that message is getting out there that we've got scabs crossing the picket line, they're making a product that's sending, you know, a vehicle out of here with all wrong tires or wrong control systems. As a customer, you're not going to buy that. And eventually that's got to hurt earnings, and eventually shareholders got to pay attention to that, right?
Well, and it damages our market share, obviously. I mean, we're always in competition with John Deere. They're our number one competitor. We were constantly gaining share on them. The fact that they went out on strike gave us a little bit of an advantage there, but unfortunately the parts issues and logistical problems that everyone's experiencing kind of hampers our ability. But yeah, to my point, if you're a farmer and you're going to spend close to $500,000 on a piece of equipment, you damn sure want to make sure that it's running right for you for the entire harvest or the entire planting season. You don't want to be worrying about having to take it to a dealer. And I can tell you, our members see a lot of tractors being brought back into the facility, which is an unheard thing. Once they leave on a flatbed, we usually don't see them again, but we're seeing a lot of them come back. And we're getting a lot of fan mail from implement dealers now saying that they're sick of waiting for their tractors. Well, you're complaining to the wrong person. I mean, you know, management could have this all settled in one day if they would just come to us with a fair agreement that we feel covers our, you know, the biggest part for me is they have plants in North America that do assembly work that they're paying $27 an hour. They were telling us that by geography, they had to pay what they were paying in those areas to attract talent. But in Wisconsin, we can get away with paying what we're offering you. And then out of the blue, I had one of my members send me a postcard that one of their friends that lives up in northern Wisconsin got in the mail, you know, like one of them, you know, addressed to Rich Glowacki or occupant. And it was actually a little postcard from CNH's New Holland plant in St. Nazian's saying, hey, come work to CNH, $4,000 sign-up bonus, 22 to 28 bucks an hour to start, paid parental leave, benefits after 30 days, and these are all better than we get.
Yeah, how do you get that?
And I'm thinking to myself, they sent it to me, and I'm like at the table, and I said, you know, your argument don't hold water.
No, I mean, how do we get those offers that you're making to somebody else
that's in our state?
Yeah,
you know, they're saying geography rules how they dictate, you know, what they're paying in wages. Well, here I got a company less than 100 miles away up by Fond du Lac, and they're getting the kind of money that they won't give us. And they're only building, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from any member or any person, employee that builds. You know, assemblers is a very difficult job. You have to keep up with your tack time. You have to know your build card. You have to know all the options. There's a lot to learn. And it's not like in the auto industry where you have like a 30-second tack time or a 45-second tack time. You got to put the seatbelt on, the windshield wiper on, and put this on. And I'm not trying to belittle them. Our tack times are anywhere from 19 to 27 minutes. And so there is all that work content that you have to memorize and know. And, you know, when you train somebody on a job, you could be there and train them for 2 weeks straight, and they still will not have experienced all the different options that we offer on a tractor. And then you're right back to where the guy's standing there going, well, what are we doing? What do we do? What do we do? You know? And we're still trying to keep our production up. We're still trying to make sure we put out a quality product. I mean, our members take it very seriously when that sticker goes on the side of the tractor that's built with pride by the UAW and Racing Wisconsin. That isn't just a slogan. I mean, for our members, it hurts them to see. Yeah. I mean, we can see. I'm a tractor repairman myself. I can watch a tractor drive by me, and I can look at certain defects that I know are constantly happening for whatever reason. A lot of times it's engineering. A lot of time it could be the man or the method. But I can look at a tractor and see it drive by me. So, well, that one's not right. Well, that one's missing that. And they're being shipped. They're being shipped to the customer. And now the dealers are sending them back because they're not accepting them. So at what point is this company going to say, hey, enough's enough? You know, I mean, every company has a bottom line.
Yeah.
They all feel, you know, that they can get away with a strike for so long. Once they hit a certain number, it's probably more cost effective to give us what we want than to incur any more losses. But obviously this company has had what I would say is a, for lack of a better term, a serious problem with unions.
So last question I got then, because that's the point where I want to get to. This is a foreign-owned company now, right?
Yes.
And, you know, someone told me a couple of minutes ago that, you know, they're the company that owns this company, this foreign company that owns Case New Holland, they would never be able to get away with the treatment of workers that they have, that they treat people here in their country.
Correct.
That you know, they get away with this stuff because our labor laws are so broken.
Yes.
Our culture is so broken. So what's the thought here?
I've always attributed what happened to the labor movement to a lack of education, and not just on the labor side of it, but at the school level. We have an education system, in my opinion, that's broken. We have people coming into our facility that have high school diplomas that I wonder how they graduated. We're not educating people. I was just telling a member of mine, I went to class, I had civics class. We talked about, you know, the Constitution. We talked about how bills are developed and how it passed. All these things that, you know, school rock, that cartoon that would come up. I'm a bill on Capitol Hill, you know.
Our generation grew up on that.
Yeah, we were taught all of our civic-minded duties, get out there to vote, you know, the things that mattered as an American, like to be a patriot, and we've gotten away from that. I mean, I ask my kids, hey, what do they teach you in high school now? Are they teaching you civics? No, not really. How about history? Well, they'll teach you about Caesar and Cleopatra and the pyramids, but ask them about Walter Reuther, or ask them about the labor movement in the 30s and the sit-down strikes. They don't even talk about that
anymore. Yeah, but that's not the fault of the teachers and educators. No. It's the curriculum.
System.
It's the system. Corporate America would never allow you to teach that radical stuff about, you know, workers demanding wages. You know, we on part of this tour, and this is aside from what we're talking about, but we went up to Scranton, Pennsylvania. We took a coal mine tour, and the tour guide was giving us what was a fabulous tour, and he was talking about the working conditions. He was saying, look, you'd be walking through knee-deep in muck and animal feces and human feces because you see any bathrooms around here? And just this horrible condition. And a woman from behind us said, well, where was OSHA? And you go, you know, there was no OSHA back then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is corporate America has no interest in us understanding that what was fought for was done by working people, was fought by the labor movement. You know, worker protections, minimum wage, maximum hour laws, all of those things weren't just given. People fought for them. People went on strike for.
Right.
So what you're doing, and I say this all the time, when there are workers on strike, those are a courageous bunch of people who have stepped forward and said, now this ends.
It's not just about the present. It is like you just said, it's about the future. I would like to leave this place in a better shape than I found it.
Yep.
We had a strike in 2004 where the company took almost $100 million out of our contract. We've been kind of trying to recover from that ever since then. Trying to get to a place where, you know, I'll tell you like this. When I first hired in Case in 1997 and I told some of my friends at the old local watering hole, like, oh, man, you're at Case? Can you help me get in there? I want to get in there, man. And now you go to the same watering hole and tell them you work at Case and they're like, well, what are you still doing there, man? That place stinks. They don't treat their workers right. The reality of it is I have established relationships with all of my members. The coworkers that I work with are probably the one main reason I keep coming back to work. There has been offers extended to me as a machinist as well as a tractor repairman from dealers that would pay me more money, but I would end up having to leave my union in a lurch. I would have to walk away from the people I've spent the last 25 years of my life working with, and to me, that has some value.
And, the community.
Yeah, exactly. And I will tell you, this community has been outstanding to us. We've had not only from the labor community, but also from the regular community at large coming here, giving us donations, supporting us. I will even go as far, we have members from the company's salaried team that have come here and has begged us to not let the company know, because we always take a picture of the person that brings a donation and post it on our Facebook page showing our appreciation for it, but they refuse to let me acknowledge them or anything, but they have repeatedly come down here and dropped off money and food for our strike, and they are workers in the plant or in the offices right now, and they don't feel what the company is doing to us is right either. I mean, so it's pretty sad when you have salaried workers sympathizing with the union workers that are out on strike that the company isn't being fair with us.
Yeah, no, and again, I go back to my position. I think there needs to be some kind of law to protect on salaried workers, non-union workers, from crossing picket lines. There should be something to give workers their conscience. So 30 seconds, what's the message for the membership at this moment? What do we want to throw out there?
Well, I'd first like to start off by thanking my membership and telling them that I am so extremely proud of them, all of them, the ones in Burlington at 807, as well as the members of 180. The membership is our strength. Without them, the leaders at the table would just be laughed upon and frowned upon. Because of them, we're able to be at that table and be able to put our demands there, and hopefully the company at some point will come to their senses and work with us to get an agreement to get back in there and build the best tractors we know how to build. All I can say to my members is I love them all. I'm glad that I am with them. I'm in this fight to the end. We're in it to win it. And at the end of the day, I'm hopeful that the company comes to their senses and tries to give us a fair agreement. So, you know, again, going back into the plant is going to be a tough one. You know,
I've been there. One day longer, brother.
Yeah, I agree.
Appreciate the time. Rich Golowacki. Again, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Tell us what you think, what you know. Quick break. Right back here from the Working Class Heroes Radio Tour.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show. Like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com. So earlier today, we spent some time out on the picket line here in Racine, and a rainy day, rainy, cold, nasty kind of day, the kind of day you don't want to be standing outside anywhere in the cold and in the rain. But these workers, look, they're fighting for their future. They're fighting for their family's future. And we talked to some people, third, fourth, fifth generation in this community, working for this company, making Case New Holland an extremely profitable company, especially coming out of the pandemic. We're talking, you know, massive profits here, and not willing to share. And in fact, in the places that they did make their final, last, best offer, even a little bit better, they had to throw a shot into it by saying that the UAW was begged them to make these improvements. And you go, this is exactly why workers need to be forming and joining unions at record numbers, because this is when you do win something and when you do demand something, it then the companies, well, you begged for this. And they're trying to make the UAW look weak. They're trying to make it look weak to their members, when the reality is what that does is it inflames thing. But this is what corporate America gets away with. And this was just, you know, the end of September into October. And, you know, this last best and final offer. I've had a couple people, you know, after our last show in Burlington, Iowa, say, no, they settled that, Rick. Didn't you see the agreement? Didn't you see the agreement that Case sent out? And I said, no, folks, that's the company attempting to impose their will by saying, here's the agreement. This is what we've agreed to. It's not what the workers have agreed to. It's not what the unions agreed to. It's what the company has said, this is what you're going to get. This is what we're going to impose upon you. And sadly, this is where, and I understand where people go, well, there's an agreement. See, look, here it is. It's in writing and it looks official and all that. Because for the mass of workers in this country, companies don't even have to do this. They just impose their will. You're going to get what their benevolence grants us. And this is where I think a lot of people have this struggle of understanding what's going on in these strike environments. It's workers saying, look, our hands create these profits. Our hands make this product. Our skill, our labor makes this incredible product, a product that we're proud of, but we also have to support our families on. And you're seeing this, you know, you see some of these vehicles coming out of this factory because they have scabs attempting to build them poorly. In fact, the union president shared with me some of the communications that dealerships around the country are throwing at him. You get back to work because, you know, we need things. And because they're not getting the products that they need. They're not getting the things that they need to sell. And they're blaming the workers for it, when really it's the company that's to blame. The workers want to negotiate. They want to be at the table. You talk to the union leadership. They want to spend every minute at the negotiating table. They want to hammer out an agreement. They want to get back to work. They want to build these products. They want this company to be profitable so they can, that's right, enrich their members. That's how this game is supposed to work. And sadly, how it's been working for far too long is you have these dictators, CEOs, and their lawyers. And the one thing that everyone agrees on, the person who's making huge amounts of money is the lawyer who's badly representing this company. Because understand, the dealers out there, they're hurting. And if you're a farmer or if you're someone looking for one of these agricultural machines, you're going to then go somewhere else. Because would you want something that was made by second tier workers? Do you want the scab machine? Do you want the thing that's coming rolling into your lot that doesn't have the UAW proudly built by UAW members sticker on it, knowing that the A-team was there to make that? No, of course not. Do you want the thing that's going to come in with four wrong tires? Of course not. You want the best product. You want that quality product that has been the past. And this is where I keep coming back to this. Companies, they're screwing themselves over long term because you're just going to tick people off and they're going to go somewhere else. And this, again, you know, the CEO is not doing the company any favors, but ego comes back to ego. No one's going to tell me what I have to offer. No one's going to tell us, the shareholders, that we have to share. And this is where you end up with this. And the more I come back to this, it's the courage of these workers to stand up and say, you know what? It's our skill. It's our labor. It's our blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into this. It's our sacrifice that have built this Case New Holland company into what it is. And we demand part of it. And I give them credit for standing up in this moment and saying enough is enough. Now, each of them has told me, you know, look, we're here. We're here in solidarity, or some of the agreement might be.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.